Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It's Here and Now. Coming up, the 2020 census may have a new question about citizenship. It's a move some say could intimidate non-citizens from participating.
The main concern is that this is going to result in a massive undercount of people that are living in the United States.
Also, Academy Award-winning actor Sean Penn's first novel is out today. It's filled with wild characters and wilder words like Tellurian, absquatulate, and cerebration. Why not just say brief thought?
I was deeply invested making myself giggle while I was writing.
These stories, and if you work in an open office space, you know there's no place to make a private call, which is why the phone booth is coming back, coming up Here and Now.
The news is first.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The White House says the U.S. has reached a deal with South Korea on a new trade pact. Here's Press Secretary Sarah Sanders.
We have come to an agreement in principle, and we expect to roll out specific details on that very soon.
This days after President Trump announced new steep tariffs on Chinese imports and escalated fears of a trade war. New initiatives are in the works to smooth the flow of goods across the U.S.-Mexico border. Here's NPR's Carrie Khan.
There was no mention of President Trump's border wall or his threat to rip up NAFTA during a visit by DHS Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen in Mexico City. Nielsen told reporters she's glad to be back.
And to be back having good, productive conversations as friends and partners do.
She signed several agreements with Mexican officials, including a plan to crack down on contraband goods and streamline cross-border health inspections. Mexican Foreign Secretary Luis Videgaray praised Nielsen for coming with a constructive and open attitude to find what he said were concrete solutions on behalf of both Americans and Mexicans. Carrie Khan, NPR News, Mexico City.
The National Rifle Association, reportedly under investigation by the Federal Election Commission and the FBI, is making a surprising disclosure. It acknowledges that it receives money from foreign sources. Federal investigators are currently looking into whether the NRA played a role in Russia's attack on the 2016 presidential election. The NRA insists that it did not use any foreign funds for election work. Here's NPR's Tim Mack.
Senator Ron Wyden, the top-ranking Democrat on the Senate Finance Committee, asked the NRA earlier this month whether it could definitively state that they have not received contributions from foreign sources. In a letter to Wyden, obtained by NPR, the NRA says that it could not make that assurance. The NRA says it does receive foreign money, but it's not used for election purposes. It also says it received no money from sources connected to Russia in 2015 and 2016. However, the NRA is not required to be transparent about how money moves between its various political entities. Wyden is now demanding that the NRA disclose how foreign funds were used over the past 3 years. Tim Mack, NPR News, Washington.
The British Parliament's considering today's testimony from whistleblower Christopher Wiley, who alleges his former employer, Cambridge Analytica, inappropriately used data it amassed from as many as 50 million Facebook user accounts. He said as much today as he directly contradicted earlier accounts by the consulting firm CEO.
It is categorically untrue, that Cambridge Analytica has never used Facebook data.
Meanwhile, Reuters News Service is reporting that Wiley says a Canadian firm, Aggregate IQ, worked on a software to profile Republican voters in the 2016 presidential election in the United States. This is NPR News. New York State and other states are legally challenging the Trump administration's plan to include a citizenship question on the 2020 census. Attorney General Eric Schneiderman says that question unfairly targets states with large immigrant populations and risks sowing greater distrust of law enforcement in those communities. New Jersey, California, and Massachusetts are also suing. NATO is joining a growing number of governments who are expelling Russian officials over the Kremlin's alleged role in the nerve agent attack earlier this month in the UK. NPR's Soraya Sarhadi-Nelson has the latest from Berlin.
NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said the expulsions leave the Russian mission with 20 members. He said the move puts Moscow on notice, just as the U.S., Canada, and many European countries did, with the expulsion of 130 Russian diplomats who were alleged to be spies.
The practical implication is, of course, that Russia will have a reduced capability to do intelligence work in NATO countries and in those countries they are expelled from.
There are EU countries who refuse to join in the coordinated reprisal against Moscow, including Belgium, where NATO is headquartered. Other abstainers include Austria, Bulgaria, Greece, and Portugal. Soraya Serhadi-Nelson, NPR News, Berlin.
U.S. home prices have posted another major gain for January. Standard & Poor's says its S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller National Home Price Index climbed 6.2% in January from a year earlier. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the financial services firm of Raymond James, offering personalized wealth management advice and banking and capital markets expertise, along with a legacy of putting clients' financial well-being first. Learn more at RaymondJames.com.
From NPR and WBUR, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It's Here and Now. Republicans are praising the Commerce Department's decision last night to add a citizenship question to the 2020 census, something that hasn't been done since 1950. But Democrats are concerned that immigrants may not respond to the census if they are forced to report their status. Here to explain is Alan Gomez, who reports on immigration and Latin America for USA Today. And Alan, it's always good to talk with you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, Alan, I mean, the Commerce Department is saying that it wants to reinstate the citizenship question in order to protect minority voting rights. So tell us more about this justification.
Right. In their release, the Commerce Department says that what they're trying to do is ensure enforcement of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And what that does is prohibit states and localities from imposing voting laws that result in any kind of racial discrimination. That's their argument. The other side is saying this is a solution to a problem that we don't have. There's been a lot of mentions of the president's voter fraud panel already, where they're trying to solve a problem that doesn't seem to exist. So they're trying to figure out why they really are doing this and what's the reason behind it.
Right. Now, I'm reading that critics of this move are actually saying it's one of the biggest proposed changes to the census in quite some time. What are their concerns?
Yeah, I mean, quite some time. This question hasn't been asked on the census in 70 years. So it's been a while. No one's really brought this up until just recently. The rumor started a couple of months ago that the administration was considering this. And the main concern is that this is going to result in a massive undercount of people that are living in the United States. By asking a citizen question, the worry is that households that have at least one undocumented immigrant living inside are not going to want to answer. And so once you get to that point, you start losing huge amounts of people that could be counted and won't be counted. And the impacts are massive. I mean, this doesn't just affect when we redraw congressional districts. This has billions and billions of dollars of impact. The census data is what's relied upon when the federal government decides things about where to place schools, roads, healthcare facilities, child care centers, senior centers. It forms the basis for countless government and academic studies that drive public policy, that inform legislation that is going through D.C. and all sorts of city halls and state houses around the country. So by undercounting the number of people out there, they worry that this is going to have a decades-long effect.
Right. We should note that there have been times in history where census information has been used to the harm of communities. I mean, I'm thinking specifically during the Second World War, census data was used to help figure out which Japanese Americans to intern after the attack on Pearl Harbor. So, I mean, that's a dark moment in U.S. history in terms of how this information has been used. But on the other hand, I'm seeing here, though, Alan, that there are laws now protecting that kind of exploitation, right? Like in 1978, Congress passed legislation that prohibits the release of personally identifiable information for 72 years after it's collected. So, I mean, is the worry overblown, I guess, is what I'm saying.
And there's two sides to that. On the one hand, yes, this is on the census website. They make it very clear that the information that you provide is confidential. So if you give over an answer to a census taker, that information cannot be used to target you specifically. But what this provides is block level information, and that drives it down to a very, very small community. And so what, let's say, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, they could potentially use that information to figure out where they want to target, what areas they want to sweep, what areas they want to go after when they're trying to round up undocumented immigrants.
I see. Now, the move does have support amongst Republicans. Texas Senator Ted Cruz thinks this is a good idea. Also, Ohio Congressman Warren Davidson supports the move. In fact, he tweeted, quote, "The count should be based on citizens, not residents. Otherwise, citizens are underrepresented. For example, California gets roughly 3 extra members of Congress based on estimates of illegal residents." Is that factually correct?
Well, and again, this is where this debate is going to. We're going to have two very different sides arguing this point. On the one hand, yes, there's an argument to be made that we should be providing those billions of dollars in government services and having representation in the Congress based on whether you are here legally or you're a citizen. But you go back to the Constitution. When they lay out the process for taking the census, there is absolutely no indication that it is only for citizens.
But it's interesting because, Davidson is talking about citizens versus illegal residents, but there are vast numbers of illegal immigrants here and permanent residents as well, which I'm not sure what his view is on those folks and should they be counted or not. But since we're talking about California, I'm seeing here that the California Attorney General said the state is going to sue the Trump administration over this question. So what effect might a lawsuit like that have?
Yeah, it's a California Attorney General and also former Attorney General Eric Holder, who is now with the National Democratic Redistricting Committee. They announced this morning that they intend to sue as well. And these lawsuits, as we've seen over the first year, can work against the Trump administration in their various attempts to limit legal and illegal immigration. Just one huge example is the DACA program, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, that the Trump administration tried to stop that. Federal courts told them they could not, based merely on the process that they used to end it. And in this case, they're announcing this question with just 6 days before the deadline to add questions to the 2020 census. We haven't heard about this. There were rumors that they were going to do this, but there was no public comment. There was no discussion with Congress. There was none of that. And so there's going to be a lot of questions about how they reach this decision.
Well, Alan Gomez reports on immigration and Latin America for USA Today. Alan, thank you so very much.
Thanks for having me.
Kosovo is celebrating 10 years of independence this year. It's Europe's newest nation and one of Europe's poorest places, its most visible export being the thousands of Kosovars the country sends abroad in search of work. But by one marker, it's made progress. Women are playing a bigger role in public life in what has traditionally been a very macho society. Joanna Kakissis has our story from Kosovo.
On a chilly day in the countryside of eastern Kosovo, I get a crash course on why this is such a man's world. My teacher is Veprora Shehu, who runs a women's center here. Like most Kosovars, she's ethnic Albanian. She explains the ancient Albanian moral code called the Kanun.
Well, that was like the first constitution, I would say.
Was it written then, the Kanun?
Written, yes. It is existing in written. Kanun of Lek Dukagjini.
Lek Dukagjini was an Albanian nobleman who lived 500 years ago. His kanun gave all power and rights to men. Women, on the other hand, were, and I quote, sacks for carrying children.
And to tell you the truth, I couldn't stand to read it.
Shehu says that modern law has, of course, replaced the kanun, but she still sees its influence in the shaming of rape victims and domestic violence survivors and in education.
Especially in some places, in some smaller villages, there is education of only sons, not daughters.
But in the decades since this nation declared independence, women in Kosovo are starting to take charge. Consider the police force, where women only held desk jobs before the 1998-99 War of Independence from Serbia.
the work in the uniform was more seen as the jobs which are reserved only for the men's and for the muscles.
That's Atifeta Yahyaga. She joined the force in her 20s, just after the war. International organizations pushed for half of police officers to be female. Men said women should be excused from rigorous physical training.
But I never ever allowed that because we were not building a woman police officer, a man police officer. We were building police organization in accordance to the best international standards.
By her 30s, Yahyaga held the top rank of general lieutenant colonel. The U.S. then nudged the male-dominated parliament in the strongly pro-American country into selecting Yahyaga as the first female president of Kosovo. It's a largely ceremonial role, but she used it to promote women's equality.
She had to go through hell in the beginning because she was criticized for